Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wild, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rickrow.
And today we have a really fun episode planned. Over the past couple of weeks, we've gotten a lot of information about upcoming fall releases, movies that I'm sure we will be talking about all season long, as we say, counting down to next year's Oscars. So we will be doing a fall film festival preview. When we were putting this episode together, going through our outline, I kept thinking of our beloved Entertainment Weekly fall movie preview. So I'm really excited to talk about these festivals. We don't attend all of them, but we try to get to, I think, as many as we can and really just soak in the atmosphere and really get to enjoy so many of these new films.
Yeah, I'm excited that we are getting into the meat of who we are as Oscar Wilde and the coverage we have every year leading up to, during, after award season, seeing how it's shaping up and then looking back at what went differently than we expected. So this is kind of our starting point. We had early Oscar predictions earlier this year, and now it's starting to really form. So I think today will be insightful for all of us. And the way we kind of structured this, not so much month by month as Entertainment Weekly did, and as we have in the past on the pod last year, but instead talking about distributors and their slates and how those will look between the festivals. We'll also, as these festivals are happening, talk about our experiences, because we will be at different festivals and we'll have some updates, some live updates potentially at the festivals when we're there. And then afterwards, of course, we'll give our recaps and continue to talk about award season. So I'm excited as we look towards the Venice International Film Festival, the Telluride Film Festival, the Toronto International Film Festival, and the New York Film Festival. We'll also talk about what has already come out this year in terms of Cannes and some of what you had already captured when you were there at the festival. So a lot to get into, lots of movies. I'm excited to see where we end up.
Yeah, so festivals are starting really soon, and I think what's cool about them is they're all very different. You've been to Venice before. I think outside of Cannes, this is the most glamorous international film festival. This starts on August 27th and runs until September 9th. So a lot of films that premiere at Venice won't actually come to Telluride, because Telluride takes place over Labor Day weekend. That, of course, takes place in Colorado. It's a much smaller film festival. This will be my third time going to that one, and I'm very excited for the slate. And then we will both be going to Toronto and New York this year. So Toronto starts early to mid-September, and this is a very large public film festival. And then New York is our local one. This is our festival that we go to. It runs for a very long time in September and October, but I always feel like fall doesn't officially start until New York Film Festival begins. It's like the kickoff to fall. It feels just being here in New York at that time is just the best place to be. I'm partial. But then what happens is we also see regional film festivals and AFI, which is at the end of October. That's in LA. Those lineups haven't come out yet. Not a lot of world premieres will go to regional festivals or AFI. We might see a few here and there. But most of the big titles that I think we'll talk about this season will have a premiere at one of these big festivals, or maybe not at all. And we'll talk about that near the end of the episode. But you listed some films here that came out at Cannes or other film festivals even last year that won't have a fall festival run. So we can, I think, talk through some of those. There's still two of these that I have not seen yet, though.
And I'm curious about them. One, in why they're not being released at other festivals, and two, if that's a bad sign for their awards chances, or if it's just a choice by the distributor. So first we had Eden, which came out last TIFF, and this is by Ron Howard, starring Jude Law and Ana de Armas. I just remember hearing a lot of high praise for Ana, and I'm curious why its press hasn't gained momentum leading into this year, which is what I was assuming would happen in terms of its awards run, because it wasn't last year. But this has a release of August 22nd, and this is being released by Vertical. And then we have two Cannes releases. So Splitsville also being released August 22nd today, being released by Neon. Die My Love, this was at Cannes, by Lynn Ramsey with Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson. Currently has a release of November 7th, being released by Mubi. And then Heist to Lowest in select theaters now and being released by Apple. This is Spike Lee's next big film with Denzel Washington, a sort of remake of High and Low by our dear Akira Kurosawa. And then lastly, I wanted to mention Twinless. This is being released by Roadside on September 5th. And this was a pretty big Sundance Award winner for the film itself and Dylan O'Brien. So briefly talked about that before, hoping he has some chances. But what do you make of these and why potentially some of them hadn't gone to other festivals?
First, I'll say I think Splitsville feels like such a summer release or a late summer release that doesn't totally make sense as a fall festival player. Dakota Johnson and Audrey Arjona, I really liked them both in it. And as mentioned previously, I will be using Dakota Johnson's character's wardrobe as outfit inspiration for the rest of the fall. And Highest to Lowest, I wish had like a full season run. I don't know if it would amount to anything. I just think that's what Spike Lee and Denzel Washington deserve. Die My Love is curious because, so this came out of Cannes. I saw it there. I raved about Jennifer Lawrence's performance. The word is that Lynn Ramsey is back in the editing room with the film, that it might not have been ready in time for Cannes, or that it might have been a rougher cut of the film that we saw there. And so she's going back into the editing room and tinkering with it. This still has, like you said, a November 7th release date from Mubi, but I think that's the reason why we haven't seen it come up at any of the other fall festival lineups so far. Because to me, when I saw this, I thought, oh, this will definitely play at New York Film Festival. That feels like a perfect fit for it. And as we'll talk through with some of these slates, each film festival really has its own unique flavor. So sometimes certain movies, you will see it and you'll just think, oh, of course, that's going to go to that film festival. That director has a relationship with that festival, they've shown a number of their films there before. And so for Lynn Ramsey, I think Die My Love, I certainly expected it to appear at New York at least, but I think because it's not quite finished yet, again, we'll have to wait for it and wait and see. But I do recommend it and I do think you'll like it. So I'm excited for you to see it whenever that may be.
Yeah, the only one I've seen here is Twinless, and I definitely want to see Die My Love and Highest to Lowest, and what everyone is raving about with Eden. But I think those other two from Cannes, definitely.
So let's get into our distributors here. So we'll be talking through, I think, some of our biggest studios and distributors who will be taking their slates to various film festivals. We'll start with Neon. So Neon, of course, distributed Anora, Sean Baker's film, which won numerous Oscars, including Best Picture. So Neon, always we talk about being the Palme d'Or queen. Will they win Best Picture again? We'll see. So they had a huge Cannes slate this year, and quite a few of those titles will have healthy festival runs. So of the prize winners, it was just an accident, Jafar Panahi's film that won the Palme d'Or. That will be coming out in the States October 10th. This will have the full Telluride, Toronto, and New York Film Festival run. Then Sentimental Value, which won the Grand Prix, which is essentially second place at Cannes. That will be released here in the States November 7th. This is Joachim Trier's film, his follow-up to The Worst Person in the World, starring Renate Reinsve, Stellan Skarsgård, Inga Ibsdotter Lilius, Elle Fanning. I want everyone to see this movie. I think I might see this at Telluride, TIFF, and New York again.
Oh my God.
Before its actual release date. We'll see. I did love it that much. We'll just see how I can make time in my schedule for it. Also, The Secret Agent, which won Best Director for Kleber Mendoza-Filho and Best Actor for Wagner Moura. That is coming out here in the States December 5th. And we'll also be doing that Telluride TIFF New York combo. We also have Surratt, which won the Cannes Jury Prize. It tied with Sound of Falling. I'm very eager to see this. This might be one of those press screenings where we have to go together to see it because I hear it's wild and feels like Mad Max Fury Road meets Climax, which I feel like is perfect for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we should see it together. But of these films, what do you make of these films that Neon has before we even get into some of their others? What do you think about these Cannes titles and where they're going and what they might do the rest of the season?
I mean, just looking at their entire slate, including the ones we haven't mentioned, they're all international films. And mm-hmm. maybe Sentimental Value has a little bit of English with Stellan Skarsgård and Elle Fanning. I don't know, that feels a little weird, not in a bad way, but all of these films having done so well at Cannes, I'm excited for all of them, obviously, and I don't know, I'm curious what that will mean in terms of Oscars, because we're not always fighting over 4-5+ international films in the really big categories. Would I love to see it? Definitely. And the fact that all of these films have different kinds of wins too, director, actor, picture, runner-up picture. So again, those can also show up in different ways. And that's really exciting. And a lot of these directors, filmmakers, we've been championing for years. Joaquin Trier with The Worst Person in the World. I love that with Mendoza Filho for The Secret Agent, he directed one of my favorites from 2019, Bacurau. And that mm-hmm. was just insane cinema, like you are describing Surratt. So I'm all in on this. I didn't in my early predictions, and now I'm kind of second guessing myself because also he's had other films show up in the awards conversation. So I think a lot of these can play really well with wide audiences. I don't know. We're going to have to see, but because they have Neon behind them, I think their marketing and campaigning could be very, very strong also.
I think so too. I think it's really just about what they prioritize and mm-hmm. what catches on with audiences. Like last year, I think we all thought The Seed of the Sacred Fig might do better than it ended up doing, but they really put all of their chips behind Anora and it worked out. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if they can balance multiple contenders this year. For me, even though it was just an accident, won the Palme d'Or, and I love that film. I think it's so successful and the ending is really incredible. I am still thinking about that ending. Also, great trailer. Watch the trailer if you haven't already. I think it sells the film perfectly. But I do think I can see Sentimental Value in The Secret Agent really hitting with audiences in different ways. He does play with some of that bizarre filmmaking that he uses in Bacurau here in this one. I think you might think it's really straightforward on the surface, but there's a sequence in this movie that is wild and throws you for a loop and is really cool. I think it's a really interesting touch. And Sentimental Value, I think, will appeal to the people in the Academy who loved Ordinary People and Hannah and Her Sisters and Terms of Endearment and those sorts of family dramas, while also, I think, feeling really fresh and new at the same time, and also how it looks at the film industry. So I would say I would bank on those two for now as being the big contenders from Neon. But we also have No Other Choice, which is the great Park Chan-wook's follow-up to Decision to Leave, which we both really liked. But I think we're even bigger fans of other things in his filmography mm-hmm. for sure. I know The Handmaiden is my favorite of his. But just the stills and the trailer, I actually watched part of the trailer and then decided not to continue because I wanted to be really surprised. And I know that you were also like that yeah. sometimes where you'll actively avoid trailers. But this is being billed as a black comedy thriller, which I think that's the perfect zone really for Park Chan-wook. But it follows a newly unemployed man who, desperate to land a coveted position, hatches a ruthless plan to dispatch his competition. That sounds great.
Yeah, I'm all in on this. I actually did the same thing, and I have for a few of them, including it was uh-huh. just an accident that I start the trailer It looks incredible. Lee Byung-hun being the lead actor in the film, featured a lot in the trailer. I'm like, that's enough. We're good. I'm going to stop. So this has its premiere at Venice, and then will also be shown at New York and TIFF, where Lee Byung-hun is receiving one of its big tribute awards. And we can mention some of those throughout this list today. But I cannot wait for this. I think every film that Park puts out, we're all seated for, no matter what it is. I saw the re-release of Old Boy last year. I rewatched Handmaiden this past week, and I love all of them, and I can't wait. We also have Exit 8, so this is a more obscure kind of piece. This premiered at Cannes and will be at TIFF. Potentially has an early 2026 release, but because this is really the first one we've mentioned that doesn't have a full festival run, I think will be really interesting for audiences, but maybe not one of those awards players. It's got this like weirdly interactive quality where it's a thriller, a movie, but it's based on this cult adventure game. So I am very intrigued by that. And I heard great things out of Cannes. So I am definitely prioritizing this at TIFF just in case I can't see it until next year.
Yeah, I'll definitely try to see this at TIFF too, because I didn't catch it at Cannes. It was in the midnight section, and these festivals really test my sleep schedule. So this is one I had to skip. But I mean, just looking at this, like you said, I think Neon could fill the international feature category this year. Like, they could really dominate it with what they have coming. So I'm really curious to see how it all shakes out. Next, we'll move on to the big behemoth that is Netflix. They have a huge slate this year with some favorite filmmakers, I think, of the industry and also of ours. Some years they have one big movie that they push. If we think about Emilia Perez last year, The Power of the Dog, they'll put all their chips behind one contender. Or sometimes they'll let that contender emerge more organically, like All Quiet on the Western Front, for instance. Speaking of All Quiet on the Western Front, one of those titles that they have is Ballad of a Small Player. This will world premiere at Telluride and then move to TIFF. This is from Edward Berger. It stars Colin Farrell and Tilda Swinton. I'm very excited for this. I think two of our favorite actors as well. And Colin Farrell is playing a gambler in Macau, which sounds very fun. This will have a limited release in October, so October 29th, before it heads to the streaming platform. The thing about Telluride, which I'll mention here, which we didn't mention at the top, is that Telluride, its lineup announcement, it's a cool little quirk of the festival in that we don't get our lineup until the day before. So there are a lot of guessing games as to what will be there. And the biggest clues are premiere distinctions. So for Ballad of a Small Player, when it was announced at Toronto, it said that that would be its Canadian premiere. It wasn't going to Venice, so that's how we figured out it would be at Telluride. They have a number of films, though, really going everywhere. I think another one we're really excited for is A House of Dynamite. This is Kathryn Bigelow's White House thriller. Very excited she's back. Rebecca Ferguson is in this. Greta Lee, a number of really exciting people. This will world premiere at Venice and then move to the New York Film Festival before it streams on October 24th.
And this, I think, is the most exciting thing about Netflix's slate, is that they are supporting a bunch of auteurs that we have known for years. So that also intrigues me to see what they will push and how they are going to support all of these artists. So far, you've mentioned Edward Berger, Kathryn Bigelow. Next, we have Frankenstein by Guillermo del Toro. Famously, he and Kathryn Bigelow, their movies have won Best Picture. They have Best Director Oscars. And then we'll mention more in a second. But Frankenstein, I'm very excited for this. I feel like this is going to be their biggest push. I feel like it has to be. It's another very artistic piece by Del Toro, having its premiere at Venice and then showing at TIFF. It has a limited theatrical release on October 17th before streaming on November 7th. But this has a little bit of something for everybody. So Jacob Elordi as the monster, Oscar Isaac as Dr. Frankenstein, Mia Goth. The stills of this movie are incredible. The production design looks wonderful. Makeup and hairstyling. I think we could see this show up at the Oscars in lots of ways, in the technical categories and above the line. So this one I really can't wait to see.
That image we have of Jacob Elordi as Frankenstein's monster, I'm so excited to see this now. I think especially because of the costumes and the production design. So we spoke with Tamara Deverell about her work on Nightmare Alley, and she'll be back as the production designer. I think the production design really just looks incredible. And the costumes are from Kate Hawley, who also did Crimson Peak, which I'm obsessed with the costumes in that movie. And there's an image from Frankenstein that the Netflix Instagram account posted of this red veil.
Mm-hmm.
That is stunning. I need to reread the book. I haven't read the book since high school, and I think I owe it a reread before the movie. I think another big player from Netflix will be Jay Kelly. So this is Noah Baumbach's follow-up to White Noise. This will be making the Venice Telluride New York Film Festival jump. This is a movie about Hollywood. It's about an aging star named Jay Kelly, played by George Clooney. Adam Sandler plays his longtime manager and friend. The crafts and below the line people working on this movie, the list is absolutely insane. Lena Sandgren as our DP. We have Nicholas Britell doing the score. It's a really exciting group, I think, putting this movie together. And I am just a sucker for a movie about a movie star or any movie about Hollywood. So I'm really excited to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And then speaking about movies about movie making, Nouvelle Vague or New Wave. This is Richard Linklater's take on Godard's making of Breathless. I saw this at Cannes, but this will be continuing into the fall, going to Telluride in Toronto. It'll be in theaters on Halloween. Very odd Halloween movie, I think. And then on Netflix, November 14th. I recommend this really for Zoe Deutsch's performance as Jean Seberg. I really hope that she gets flowers this Oscar season, this award season. But yeah, Netflix, again, movies about movie making. We have some big casts here. And this one is made up of quite a few unknown French actors. But wow, do they resemble the people they're playing. It's kind of crazy. The actor who plays Romare looks exactly like him. It's like they're from another time. They found these faces that have never seen iPhones before.
As French people seem to do, I think more often than not. And this film is in black and white, which is exciting too, I think, mirroring again how Godard shot Breathless. And the last big one from Netflix we have here is Wake Up Dead Man. This is Rian Johnson's follow-up to Glass Onion. I'm excited for Benoit Blanc's next mystery. I would say mostly because of its, like its predecessors, its crazy cast. We have Josh O'Connor playing a reverend. We have Glenn Close, Josh Brolin, Mila Kunis, Jeremy Renner, Kerry Washington, Andrew Scott, Kaylee Spaney, Daryl McCormick, Thomas Hayden Church, and more. So a lot of this is being kept under wraps, which I'm happy about. This will have its world premiere at TIFF before it streams on Netflix December 12th. So I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot of buzz out of the festival and hopefully no spoilers. But, and I didn't mention Daniel Craig, but he plays Benoit, and this actually isn't the only time we'll talk about Andrew Scott today, who actually won a big award out of Berlin. So I'll talk about that film next, Blue Moon. But I think overall with Netflix, in terms of what we've seen with the past Oscars, I think just playing with its best chances, I mean, a lot of this will come down to reviews maybe and audience appreciation and how it does streaming. I mean, we're seeing that a lot with K-pop Demon Hunters right now, I think, just with streaming and now bringing that into theaters. And I think just Netflix breaking their mold and having at least limited theatrical runs for a lot of these. But I'm assuming they're going to push Frankenstein, probably Wake Up Dead Man, at least in screenplay. I think J. Kelly is going to be a huge player. And out of the other ones, I don't know, Ballad of a Small Player as a ghost story just worries me a little bit. Like, will Edward Berger just knock another one out of the park for the Academy? Like, do they just love everything he makes, or is he going to fall at some point? Not that we want him to, but, and then I think A House of Dynamite, it seems a little different in terms of like this political thriller, maybe more action leaning. It reminds me of Zero Day that went to Netflix with Robert De Niro earlier this year. I am really curious about that one. I do want to see that as soon as possible, probably at New York, but I'm hoping like Kathryn Bigelow has another big moment too. So I think they're going to wait and see also, because they have a lot of potential here.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. I think you can look at this list and say, oh, you know, Frankenstein and J. Kelly probably seem like their biggest players on paper, just with the number of people who could get nominated, the types of stories they're telling, the filmmakers that they're coming from. But I don't know. I mean, I'm rooting for Kathryn Bigelow to do really well. I think it would be really cool if she won the Golden Lion, or if this film really was something big. I'm rooting for her, sight unseen. And Ballad of a Small Player just sounds fun. And sometimes a movie can just be a well-made adaptation of like an airport thriller, and that's fine too. I'm wondering if J. Kelly could actually be like Mank, where Netflix collects a lot of nominations and it just doesn't necessarily translate to wins. But people at the beginning of the season have it at the top of their category lists everywhere. But then when push comes to shove, that's not necessarily where the passion lies. I could see that happening. Just a hunch. We don't know yet. Frankenstein, huge tech player. So yeah, they have a ton on their plate. But I need to see Glenn Close as Martha Delacroix. That's what I need in my life now.
We all need more Glenn Close in our lives. But like I was saying with Andrew Scott, so he won the Best Supporting Performance for Blue Moon. This is from Sony Pictures Classics. So we're going to move into their smaller slate now. But I think I was slightly surprised that Andrew was the winner, because this movie is all about Loren's heart and his struggle with alcoholism and mental health. So I wonder, and we talked about this on our early Oscar predictions episode, but if Ethan Hawke will have a lot of buzz for lead actor. Margaret Qualley also stars in this with Bobby Cannavale. But will Andrew Scott get his due that he deserved with All of Us Strangers too? And that was lead, but he's supporting here. So, you know, that could be more attention from the Academy, and he's a really beloved actor. This will be at Telluride, TIFF, and New York. So I think we'll be seeing a lot of this, and the fact that it's pretty actor heavy, along with its creator, Richard Linklater, which should have been what I started with. He also has Nouvelle Vague, but this could be a big above-the-line player in multiple categories.
Yeah, I think this movie looks lovely. I can't wait to see it. It's interesting how many movies this year, and we have this every year, I think, but how many are about famous artists dealing with some sort of personal or professional reckoning and the director's connection to that. Sometimes it'll be based on a real person, other times it's a fictional character, but definitely a popular theme, I think, that we'll see this season. The next two I saw at Cannes, but I think audiences will really enjoy. The first is Be Privé or Private Life. This stars Jodie Foster and Virginie Efira. This is a fun murder mystery. This is also an entirely French language film, and Jodie Foster just reminds us why she's one of the great actresses and so much fun to watch. But this will likely be going to Telluride and definitely Toronto and New York. And Eleanor the Great, which is Scarlett Johansson's directorial debut, starring June Squibb. This will come out September 26th, but it will also go to TIFF first. And I think audiences at that festival will really eat up June Squibb's performance. It's an odd movie. I think it has some abrupt tonal shifts, but it's a good New York movie too. And I think that the big question always with Sony Pictures Classics is, what will their sleeper acting contender be? Because they are really good at just parking a movie in a theater in LA or New York and letting voters see it for months and really drumming up passion and support. We think about I'm Still Here, Parallel Mothers, and I'm wondering if that can happen specifically, I think, for Andrew Scott, for Blue Moon, or even Ethan Hawke, even though he wasn't the one who won the prize in Berlin. I'm wondering if either of them can make it happen this year.
I think it's possible. You know, I'm really rooting for June Squibb. I don't know. She's just a lovely presence, I think, on the carpet and in these movies. She does look adorable in the trailer. So I'm curious about this. I've heard some interesting things about its structure, like you said also. But I think with Andrew Scott, that would be incredible with Blue Moon. This, I feel like, is Sony Pictures Classics' best chance in terms of acting or what we've seen in the past. That is a movie that they'll push of these three. So I would bet on Blue Moon right now, at least. But again, lots of word of mouth could change this. Our next distributor is A24, a big one, but their slate this year seems kind of small. It's not a bad thing. It could mean that they can really push something. And of the list, we have a lot of acting performances with potential. So we'll start off with The Smashing Machine. This is Dwayne The Rock Johnson's big film. And you can tell just by the trailer that he has prosthetic transformation. So again, hair and makeup could be big at the Oscars, could be an easy one. We could be mentioning throughout the season, oh, hair and makeup combination with best actor, is this possible? But I think that this is being directed by Benny Safdie, so they're split up, but we'll mention the other Safdie's big film at the very end. This will be premiering at Venice and showing also at TIFF, and this has an October 3rd release date. Also, Emily Blunt is starring, and this feels like, before you were mentioning, biopic performances, fictional, real. You know, we had that with Blue Moon and Ethan Hawke, but also I didn't mention Andrew Scott is playing Richard Rodgers, and we just mentioned him last week with The Sound of Music. So I think that's an interesting performance and maybe why he won. And this could be another one where The Rock, you know, he was a big WWE star, wrestling star, and how he talks about his history and his past in that sport versus what he went through during the filming, I think could really entice voters. And I'm curious about this, if this is going to be a big acting possibility from the start and sustain itself, or how A24 is going to hold this one up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this has potential to be a really big player, I think, especially for Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt. I think he's going to be a big presence this season on the campaign trail. TIFF is hosting a conversation with him where he will be talking, like you said, about his career and how he went from, as they say, the ring to Hollywood. So I think that's going to be really one of the stories of the season. And watch out, because for the actors, narrative can be a really powerful thing. And just based on the trailer, I think I'm really curious to see what Benny Safdie has up his sleeve. I'm really excited for If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You. This is coming out October 10th. I think the title alone is really fun, and it's going everywhere. So obviously, with Telluride, nothing is confirmed, but possibly Telluride, Toronto, New York, and it just got announced for Fantastic Fest. So this has also already gone to Sundance, and Rose Byrne won at Berlin for leading performance. She won the Silver Bear there. So this looks like one of those feature film full-length panic attacks, and Rose Byrne really going for it. And I love performances like that. And I love her. I feel like I've been waiting for her to get a role like this or some sort of recognition for a while. So I'm definitely rooting for her here.
Oh, I am too. I think since the moment I heard that she won and that she had given her best performance ever, I was very interested in seeing this. I still very much am. And would love to see her have an Oscar nomination. We've never really even, I don't know, considered that for her before. But I think ever since Bridesmaids was a big Oscar player and, you know, she can show her comedy. And here she's just doing extreme, dramatic, really intense, from what it sounds, performance. She can show all of the range that she has. So I'm really excited for this. Pillion is the next film from A24 that came out at Cannes, won the Un Certain Regards Screenplay and Palme d'Or Awards. This has Alexander Skarsgård and Harry Melling. Weird from what I remember you saying. I'm intrigued. I know Eric really loved this out of Cannes, so I'm curious. This doesn't sound as much like an Oscar player because of its content, but who knows? What did you think of this one?
I really liked it, and I think it's a really sweet film that I think audiences will really like. Like, yes, its subject matter is this BDSM story of these two men, but it's also a very sweet, very cute movie. And I don't say that like to disparage it or anything or to make it sound twee. It's not. It is just a really solid, great story too. And mm-hmm. I love films like that, especially British ones. But definitely more of the indie spirit type of awards crowd. I don't think this will really make waves with larger industry prizes, but I think we could see it pop up maybe at some smaller critics groups or somewhere like that.
I think for A24, I would say their best chances are with acting for Byrne and Johnson, with maybe this, I don't know, weirdly feels like screenplay potential, but interesting how they'll push these. If those are, then I feel like so far they would have a pretty good shot of getting in or being in the conversation. So definitely people to look forward to and films too.
I think their show pony though is coming out around Christmas.
That is the one. I was like, wait, we're missing something. We'll mention, mm-hmm. yeah, the big.
We'll get to it.
The big one last.
The supreme of them all. Next up, we have Mubi, which I think really around Cannes went head-to-head with Neon with the number of titles that we just saw them pick up or deals that were made. So we already talked about Die My Love and the absence of that film throughout the festival circuit, but we have a number of other movies here that they have coming. So a few Cannes titles we have that are doing short or some longer festival runs. The History of Sound, this is the romance around folk music starring Josh O'Connor and Paul Mescal. That is presumably going to Telluride, but that has a release date of September 12th. So we can cover that maybe on a fall release roundup later this season, but because of its release date, it's not going to have a fall festival run. We'll also see The Mastermind. This is, again, starring Josh O'Connor, Kelly Reichert's, I will say, anti-art heist Vietnam era movie. I loved this so much, but I am also a diehard Kelly Reichert fan. If you like her movies, this is right up your alley. If you don't, you might watch this and say, oh, that's it? And that to me is a good thing, but I think to some viewers, if you're not as big of a fan of her work, just go into it, I think, with an open mind. This will likely go to Telluride. And we'll definitely be at New York Film Festival, which I think is the perfect home for it. I think people there will love this movie and will embrace it with open arms. Similarly, Sound of Falling, which tied with Surratt for the Cannes Jury Prize. This is Masha Shalinsky's film, and it is the story of girls in one home across multiple generations. One of my favorites from that festival. This will be likely skipping Telluride, going to TIFF, and then New York Film Festival, where I also think audiences and critics there will really like it.
I think some other films that really have a home in New York, like you were saying about the previous ones, Sorrentino's La Grazia is maybe more notably Venice's opening film, so it has its premiere there. It will also be at Telluride and New York. And then Jim Jarmusch's Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, not at Telluride, but at the other ones, Venice and New York. This is a centerpiece at New York, actually. And this stars Cate Blanchett and Vicky Krieps. So this is maybe it's just the movie slate is something that is more your vibe. I think that's definitely so far. I'm intrigued by the history of sound. But I remember what you said during your Cannes recap about that and The Sound of Falling. I am really excited for that one. And I think just last but not least, we have Orphan. This is Laszlo Nemes's next film. If we remember, he won the International Feature Oscar for Son of Saul, filmed in a 1:1 ratio. This will be at Venice and TIFF. I'm hoping to see this at TIFF. This is talking about the aftermath of the Hungarian uprising in Budapest. So I'm intrigued by this. I think this is a very interesting slate. Again, fall festival audience forward. And I'm interested how all of these will play during the award season.
Yeah, me too. Next, let's go to Amazon MGM. I think one of the great mysteries of this festival season is Luca Guadagnino's After the Hunt. This will have a limited theatrical release October 10th and will go wide October 17th. I think before all the festival lineups started to come out, people were thinking this might be a huge player come award season. And I think it still could be. But I think there are also some things that make me raise my eyebrows just a little bit. The first is it's premiering out of competition at Venice, which I don't think is actually a ding on its quality. We've had plenty of films that have played out of competition that were really successful in the awards race. Dune, Part One, was out of competition at Venice. Bradley Cooper's A Star is Born was out of competition at Venice. So it's not necessarily a ding on quality. It's just interesting because Julia Roberts can't compete for the Volpe Cup. And then I think, okay, maybe it'll make the jump to Telluride. It's not doing that. It's also not going to TIFF. It's just going to New York Film Festival from there. So I don't know. I think I'm just cautiously optimistic here. But I also have doubts about how successful this could be, not just in an award season run, but just as a film. I think subject matter, it's right up my alley. It's about a professor and a scandal on a college campus. I love that. Sign me up. But we'll see.
The trailer for this feels like a ticking time bomb. It's incredibly edited, and it was definitely not what I was expecting from Luca Guadagnino. I think it still could play fairly well later in the year, and having an October or with some of these other films that we've talked about or will, a later release date in the year is a good thing for it. So I'm not as worried. I mean, are his films like really loved by the Academy? Not always. So I think my, again, expectations are a little bit lower, but I'm hoping this film is for us and maybe not for everybody, which is fine. Because yeah, the performances, the screenplay, again, multiple components, I think could still do really well with guilds.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. We also have Hedda from Nia DaCosta. This stars Tessa Thompson in the titular role, based, of course, on the Ibsen play. This will have its world premiere at TIFF and will have a limited theatrical release October 22nd, and then will be streaming on Prime on October 29th. I am really looking forward to seeing what Tessa Thompson does with this iconic role, and maybe she could get a Best Actress nomination. That would be fun.
We've been talking about this movie for 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, honestly, she better. And I'm pretty much expecting that she can and will give us a performance that deserves one. I am pretty disappointed, though, that it's only at TIFF and it's going pretty much immediately to streaming. That's the only film here that we have something like that. And I don't know. It feels odd. But again, I think Nia DaCosta, Tessa Thompson, they'll be able to speak very, very well about this film and about its adaptation and their collaboration. So I'm no less excited for this and we'll hopefully get to it at TIFF. Another one we mentioned a few times, or at least earlier this year, is The Lost Bus. So this is being distributed by Apple TV Plus. This is Paul Greengrass's true story thriller starring Matthew McConaughey and America Ferrera. This will have its world premiere at TIFF with a theatrical release on September 19th and then on Apple TV Plus soon after on October 3rd. We were curious about how this would play. I think I'm still in the same boat. I mean, if this shows up in a People's Choice winner at TIFF, I think our minds are going to totally flip and really think about it differently. So maybe a lot of it hinges on that, but still curious what people will think of this.
Yeah, me too. And we've joked before, and it's, I mean, the joke is in the truth that Jamie Lee Curtis is one of the producers on this film. So yes, it will have a healthy, vibrant campaign this season. But, you know, this is based on this book, Paradise, One Town's Struggle to Survive an American Wildfire. And it's not about the Los Angeles wildfires, but wildfires are very much top of mind, I think, for people after what happened at the beginning of this year. So it could be really emotional and it could hit with audiences. So it's definitely one that I'll keep in mind for sure. And America Ferrera and Matthew McConaughey, both familiar with the Oscars too, alongside Paul Greengrass.
Mm-hmm.
I think another really interesting slate this year is Focus Features. I think the first two that came up really were Begonia and Hamnet. So Begonia will go wide on Halloween, which seems like a perfect time to release this movie about a CEO who's kidnapped and who these two guys think is an alien. This stars Jesse Plemons and Emma Stone, directed by Yorgos Lanthimos. I don't even know what number collaboration this is at this point for Emma Stone and Yorgos Lanthimos. Mm-hmm. They've worked so much together. This is interesting because I think at the beginning of the season, people were thinking this could be a huge priority for Focus Features, but it's only going to Venice and possibly Telluride. And it's kind of strange that this wasn't selected for the New York Film Festival, considering the relationship that Lanthimos has with that festival. The Favorite premiered there. Poor Things was in the main slate. Even Yorgos' short film was there, mm-hmm, and got a special screening. So it's odd to me that Begonia isn't there. What do you think of that?
From the first time we mentioned this on the pod, I was wary of its potential. And I think this is kind of confirming that. I just think it's going to be a really bizarre feature. And since people had been comparing this more towards Dogtooth that he has directed, like early Lanthimos, that could be why, that it's not for everyone. So I think a lot of audiences will go see this when it's released wide because of those previous films they've collaborated on. But it may turn out to be less of an awards player than some of his other films have been.
Mm-hmm. I think Hamnet, though, is a major awards player. This is Chloe Zhao's latest film based on Maggie O'Farrell's novel. It is so beautiful. It starts off very slow, I will say. It takes a little bit to get into, at least it did for me. It takes a little bit of time. But once you are into its rhythm, it is just such a beautiful story about a mother's grief and her family life, falling in love with the man who becomes her husband. And that woman is Agnes Shakespeare. She's married to the Shakespeare, of course, but he is never mentioned by name in the book, which I think is a really cool literary trick that she pulls off. And the ending of this book made me cry so hard in the park that I was thrilled I had a pair of sunglasses in my bag. So if Chloe Zhao can pull that off, I think we have a big winner on our hands. This stars Jesse Buckley in the lead role. This will really be her movie, I think. Paul Mescal is playing Shakespeare, but he is, I think, a secondary character to her. This isn't Shakespeare in Love. This isn't a film about Shakespeare. It is about her. So I'm really excited for this one. And we have Max Richter doing the score, Lucas Zahl doing the cinematography. I think it's going to be pretty great.
Everything you just said is not only in Chloe Zhao's wheelhouse, but all of those elements. Oh my God. Max Richter has to be like my number one with Ludovico Einaudi that I listen to constantly, like the past few months. So that is incredible. And yeah, there's something about this movie, or maybe just that I'm excited to get another Chloe Zhao film, that I'm like, I know I'm going to be comforted. So I'm curious. And I think with the still that we have being shown on festival sites showing Paul Mescal, I'm curious about that. And if she did like rewrite it somehow to include him a little bit more, but I think a supporting actor nomination isn't out of the realm of possibility. We talked about a 10-minute performance last week. That was a winner. So from 1965, very different, but you know, the Academy does like him. So this is on the top of my list in terms of today.
So you loving Max Richter, I want you to now think about him composing a score about the death of a child that then goes on to inspire one of the greatest tragedies ever written in Hamlet.
We need the score. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be so sad. And I'm smiling as I'm saying this because I love sad things. I love sad movies and music, but I think it's going to be great. And I am so excited to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of being really excited, Ronan Day Lewis's film Anemone will world premiere at the New York Film Festival. This is the return of the great Daniel Day Lewis, my favorite actor of all time. This will have a limited release and then will go wide on October 10th. But I cannot wait to see him on screen again. Seeing just the still from this movie was so thrilling to me. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy to get to have him on screen again.
This feels like a really exciting New York premiere. Mm-hmm. And I think because New York just doesn't have a ton of world premieres, I would say. Mm-hmm. So this is obviously a big one for Daniel Day, but I think for audiences in general, and I think for you, just seeing that it was chosen in its slate. So I think Focus is doing fairly well. Of these three, I would say Hamnet ranks their highest in terms of potential right now, or what they would push. Next up, this is really 20th Century Studios' biggest or only feature is Springsteen Deliver Me From Nowhere, which has a wide release on October 24th, but is going to Telluride and New York. I mean, Jeremy Allen White as Bruce Springsteen, the trailer is playing in theaters now. It feels so much like a complete unknown that you can't help but see them as parallels. I think his brown contacts are just like jarring to me, but
they are. I know. They really are.
I think with acting performances, I think he'll also give something that's really moving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very American and just will connect with viewers. But this is our other big biopic feature, and 20th Century knows that. I think that'll be a big push for them, but also in similar categories to A Complete Unknown, screenplay, director, picture, you know, what is its limit is my question right now.
Yeah, and I think New York Film Festival selecting this when they aren't always friendly to biopics or these kinds of more traditional films is a good sign for it. I think like it has the Dennis Lim programmer, festival director seal of approval, which is great. And in addition to some of the people that you listed, I think we can maybe expect or see an Afterglow nomination for Jeremy Strong, who's playing John Landau, who's Springsteen's manager, that I can totally see that happening in supporting actor. This trailer also makes me weirdly emotional, not because of the line about the hole in the floor, which I think is kind of funny, but Jeremy Allen White singing Born to Run as Bruce Springsteen, he sounds exactly like him and he's doing his own singing.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It's interesting because I think this and Hamnet, in terms of being at New York, feels flipped because Hamnet isn't. But again, that could be a really, really good thing for it.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised Hamnet isn't at New York just because she also has a really good relationship with that festival. So I don't know. I don't see this necessarily as a negative sign, though, for this movie, because I feel like Focus is probably pursuing the Conclave path that they did last year. So the Telluride and TIFF double and then letting it premiere later for audiences instead of taking it to New York too.
Yeah.
And adjacent to 20th Century Studios, we have Searchlight. So Searchlight, we can count on usually having at least one big player in the award season. This year, I think it might be Rental Family. This is directed by Hikari and stars Brendan Fraser, his next big role after his Oscar-winning performance in The Whale. He was, of course, in Killers of the Flower Moon. Never forget. But I watched the trailer in theaters when I saw Freakier Friday. It played before that. I know. And it just looks like the type of movie that maybe I might not love. It looks very syrupy be sweet. Maybe it won't be. I don't know. But audiences at TIFF could really eat this up. It could be our next People's Choice Award winner. It just has that kind of feel to it. Hikari is getting a tribute at the festival. Brendan Fraser is presenting that tribute, I believe. So everything's lining up for this to be a sort of coronation for this movie. And then we also have Is This Thing On?, which is Bradley Cooper's follow-up to Maestro. And this is about a man who, after a divorce, decides to dive into the New York City stand-up comedy scene. And this stars Will Arnett and Laura Dern. This will world premiere at the New York Film Festival. I read that it wasn't ready in time for other festivals, which also could happen. So maybe don't read into it not going anywhere else. It may not have just been ready in time.
I think that was curious to me. I think for both of these, because Rental Family is only at TIFF and the Cooper feature is only at New York. But I think also because it's a comedy, but I think its cast list is great. Again, we're going to see Laura Dern, Will Arnett, Kieran Hines. Yes, we've mentioned them before. Amy Sedaris, Sean Hayes. I think because we don't know anything about it, I don't know what to make of it. But if this is a player, I'd be really intrigued, I think, by that. I think anytime I see Cooper, I'm like, uh-oh, there's like a siren going off. Like, what is he pushing for? What's not going to happen? Like,
I know.
Poor guy.
I think, though, Maestro was such a take me seriously type of movie. And this doesn't feel like that. So we'll see what happens. I think he's a great filmmaker. I really do. You know, I'm partial to Bradley Cooper and I will always defend him. But this is probably him loosening up and he's really funny and has some great performances in comedies. And I thought he was terrifying and funny in Licorice Pizza. So I think he can nail this. I'm hopeful.
I think because it's the festival's closing night movie puts a little bit, honestly, less pressure on him. I don't know. But I think we have such a great slate from a lot of our big distributors. We'll probably mention some that, I don't know, make a last minute switch later on in the year. Mm-hmm. But the only other ones without big distributors so far are Mirrors No. 3 that you saw at Cannes. This will be at New York and TIFF. This was originally being released by Metrograph and now was sold to 1/2 Special. And then also one that we are both excited for, The Testament of Anne Lee, directed by Mona Fassbold, starring Amanda Seyfried. This will be at Venice and TIFF. So I think with this, could definitely be picked up by a distributor at one of these festivals. I know this was talked about a lot earlier in the year, so I don't know how this will play during award season, but I think just the largeness of it definitely gives it a boost.
Yes. I wonder who will pick these up. Mirrors number 3, which I loved. I think that feels like something maybe IFC will take, or I could see something like that happening there. It's always felt, I think, small, but I feel like festival goers will really like it. And if you like Christian Petzold's films like A Fire, Phoenix, Transit, this is great. I really loved this. One of my favorites of that festival. And I'm very excited for The Testament of Anne Lee, a musical about the Shakers. That sounds very cool. And I need to see that performance. And we also have a ton of other films without distributors that I think we will end up seeing in theaters or on streaming platforms either this year or into 2026 that we can look forward to. But of these that we talked about today, which one of these are you most excited to see?
I think I'm going to stick with my initial answer. I have a lot that I'm going to prioritize at these festivals because I can't wait, but I think Frankenstein is up there. Because it's a story we know, something we've seen before, done in various different ways, having Guillermo del Toro's vision with this cast feels somehow new. And I just love his beauty and how he'll transform another classic tale and spin it mm-hmm. in his own like dark way. So I will say Frankenstein. I'll leave it at one. What would be your pick for your most excited film?
I think it would be cheating for me to say Anemone, even though that's totally the answer, just because I have to see Daniel Day-Lewis on screen again. Oh my God. It's so exciting. But I think my real answer is Hamnet. I just can't wait to see what she does with this material and the performances, really just everything about it, because the book itself is so internal. There's not a lot of dialogue. It's a lot of how characters are thinking and what they're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Chloe Zhao as a filmmaker is really well equipped to make a movie like that. So I'm eager to see, I think, what her vision of that looks like. Mm-hmm. And Maggie O'Farrell is writing the screenplay alongside Chloe Zhao too. So yeah, I can't wait for this. There's a chapter in this book too that is so bizarre that I really hope is in the movie, because if she does, it could be one of the coolest things, but it'll be very difficult. But yeah. I'll leave that to the professional. I think she can do it.
And are there any other movies that we haven't talked about that are top of mind that you're excited to see?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm always most excited, I think, for the New York Film Festival lineup, just because that's really our home festival. So I'll just go through a couple of docs that are coming. So we're getting a new Laura Poitras doc called Cover Up, and this is about political journalism in the U.S. And I think with everything that's going on right now, it's really important, I think, to think about freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and this is about Seymour Hersh. So very eager to see that. I loved All the Beauty and the Bloodshed. I'm also obviously excited for Claire Denis' The Fence. This will be coming to TIFF and New York Film Festival. And not only is Ronan Day-Lewis coming to New York Film Festival, Rebecca Miller, Daniel Day-Lewis's partner and the great filmmaker, will also be there with her new documentary called Mr. Scorsese, which is a documentary about his life that features a lot of different interviews, and that will world premiere at the festival. So I can't wait to see that.
Those are really exciting. There are so many docs, especially at New York. But honestly, every festival that I'm trying to see, mine that I'm excited for are more narrative based, but also like in this like weird metaphysical realm. So Resurrection by Bigan was at Cannes and had really divisive reviews, which I love. And this will be at New York, so I'm really excited. They're such a visual storyteller and filmmaker that I don't know what to expect, but I'm extremely excited in the same way that I am for The Love That Remains. So this is the director's follow-up to Godland. And this new film will be at TIFF and New York. And I think just his filmmaking is incomparable. You just don't even think up some of these things and what movies can do. And I think that pushes the medium. So I'm excited for this. I really love Godland. But yeah, there are a lot that, again, may not be big awards players, but are big releases by filmmakers we like, or just looking up movies that I know nothing about, whose description or still really judging a book by its cover. I know not something I should do, but seeing things that I know nothing about and going in completely blind could be equally as exciting. So I can't wait for these festivals, our time together at multiple festivals this year, and what will come of that.
And yeah, like you said, sometimes you never know. It's just you see something because the time works, and then it could end up being your favorite thing, or, you know, at the worst, it's just a good story that you have, like, with your friend that you can laugh about, like when we saw Aggro Drift together, or
oh my God.
Other things that didn't work out the way we planned. And, I mean, there are a number of other movies that we didn't talk about today that are coming soon that don't have festival releases, that will just do kind of your traditional theatrical release. One Battle After Another, Paul Thomas Anderson's movie, is coming September 26th, so very soon, right in the thick of festival season. But I think we also need to talk about Mardi Supreme, which is that A24 movie we were alluding to, that stars Timothée Chalamet, Gwyneth Paltrow, Fran Drescher, Mr. Wonderful, I say, with gritted teeth. That's coming out on Christmas. What did you think of this trailer?
I loved the trailer. I love the poster. I am so into it. I was not expecting to be as into it as I am. The way they structure it, obviously around Timmy, because this is also a biopic. He's playing this world famous ping pong champion. Again, it felt like a ticking time bomb. And by the end, I was completely sold. Are you in the same place, or what did you think?
Oh my gosh, totally. Before the trailer, I didn't really know what to think of this movie and what it could be, but I loved this trailer. I thought it was a great trailer and such a perfect showcase for this type of movie. It felt like this kind of dynamic, kinetic, Scorsese-inspired piece. And also what we've come to expect from the Safdies, but also just fun and different. And I also like that when we talk about Jay Kelly and that being this portrait of this aging star and how that connects with Clooney so well, I kept thinking, you know, no, Timothée Chalamet is not a ping pong player, but some of the lines he is saying in this trailer felt very meta to me about his experience in Hollywood, how he speaks, especially like during his SAG speech. He has this line where he says, like, I have a purpose. And if you think that's some sort of blessing, it's not. It means I have an obligation to see a very specific thing through. And with that obligation comes sacrifice. I'm like, that is something he would say. So I think I'm really curious about just him embracing this role. And I don't know, maybe it's the time.
Right. We've seen so much of Stash Timmy also that, like, seeing it in the trailer felt bizarre almost. But
yeah.
I had a similar reaction where I'm like, I'm seeing you as an actor, but we've seen so much of you recently that it was weird in a way, but I think made me even more excited for its release. And coming out at Christmas feels like the perfect time, not only for audiences to go see this, but for awards. So we won't see it at festivals. I would love there to be like a surprise New York screening again for this, or Hamnet, I would say. But yeah, time will tell.
Yeah, secret screening would be great for this. And I think if it did go anywhere, New York makes sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this will undoubtedly be the Simonello family Christmas movie. Without
a
doubt.
It honestly feels perfect, yeah.
It does. Well, that was our fall festival preview. We hope that this helped you get excited about the movies coming this festival season, whether you're traveling to one or just watching from afar and waiting for these movies to come to your area. So I'm just wondering what we're going to be talking about for the next few months, which one of these will hit. I mean, at this point, a couple of years ago, we didn't know that The Sun would flop, for instance. We didn't know Tar mm-hmm. would be a huge thing. You just never know.
Yeah.
And then there's also the Sinners of it all. You know, Sinners already came out and people love that movie too. So I think it's going to be an interesting award season for sure.
I agree. Yeah, we covered so many movies as always. Let us know what else you're excited for. If we didn't cover anything, some of those that we missed that we're waiting on. But I love festival time and I'm really looking forward to the next 2 months, I would say, and then we'll be really narrowing things down. Next time on Oscar Wilde, we will have another episode coming out on After Dark. So this is on our Patreon page on Patreon. And we'll be covering the 40th anniversary of two films featuring the Brat Pack. So those are John Hughes's The Breakfast Club and Joel Schumacher's St. Elmo's Fire. I've seen one multiple times and I've never seen the other one. So I think this will be a fun episode. Movies that people love from the 80s.
Wait, you haven't seen St. Elmo's Fire? I'm assuming you've seen The Breakfast Club, but you haven't seen St. Elmo's Fire?
Correct. I was never allowed to. So I'm...
Oh, this is fun.
After all these years, I'm like, why wasn't I able to?
When I lived in D.C., I went to the Tombs all the time, which is a bar in Georgetown where they go in the movie.
Very cool.
Oh. We'll have a lot to talk about. That's fun. Yeah, I'm excited for that. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you like our show, please feel free to rate, review, and follow. You can find us on Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. And for bonus content, you can subscribe at patreon.com/OscarWilde. We also will have our Oscar predictions board up and running on our website. So check that out at oscarwilde.squarespace.com.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.